Blog Talk Radio.
The views expressed here are not necessarily those of all hosts, guests, or producers, and the show is for a mature audience.
Welcome to Gather Round. So tonight, instead of just being around the campfire with several people talking, we do have several people, but it's talking stick night. So we're doing independent interviews. And we have a lady with a dream, a man with a miracle, and another lady is an activist. So you're just going to get on with it.
Well, Karen Laurent is with us, and she's going to talk about a dream that she has, and it sounds wonderful to me. So she's looking ahead to the future. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
I'm so glad you came in tonight.
Thank you for having me.
Well, I'm excited about this because I'm a big fan of eco-villages, and I think that that's what you're aiming for. We should start with, you're originally from the St. Anne, Illinois area, right?
Correct.
And now you are in southern, really southern Illinois, out of a place called Cobden. What made you, pull up and head south?
Actually, my daughter came down to do orientation at the college in Carbondale.
Ah, Southern Illinois. Yes.
Yes, and I fell in love with the area. But this has kind of been my dream to find some acreage to build on my dream. And when we came down here, we were able to look at this property, and I fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Southern Illinois, I think there's a lot of national forests and things down there.
Yes. My property actually sits on the Shawnee National Forest.
Okay.
And anybody can look up the Trail of Tears. I believe it was back in like 1831.
Mm-hmm.
My property is actually part of the Trail of Tears. And that's where the Indians, where the Americans kind of were pushing the Indians.
Right, that was the Cherokee, which I have Cherokee blood in me, so yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was a horrible, horrible thing. That
yes, a lot of them died, thousands
yep.
died.
Yeah. So, but then your country is actually beautiful down there. Now, you have some acreage, right?
Correct. I have 28 acres here. The majority of it's pretty wooded,
mm-hmm.
but then there's also on the property some cliffs and some caves and ravines.
Wow.
And there's actually two waterfalls. They're not real big, but of course it has to rain quite a bit before we get to see the water and the waterfalls.
Right. That's wonderful, and you've even got caves, so you've pretty much got it. Now, you have on the property, there is a house, right?
Yes, yes. The current owners, there was a house built here. So, yes, my son and I live in the house. It's a rather large house. Anybody that would like to come down and visit is welcome to stay in the house while they're here visiting. And if they made the choice to actually move here, they would be able to reside in the house. We could split expenses in this house, and then each individual could save up their own money to buy materials, and then they would build their own eco-friendly green home.
Okay. Now, what do you just envision? What kind of houses do you envision people building?
My only requirement is that they have to be as green as possible, whether they're straw bale houses, cob houses, houses that are built into the earth, any kind of a, just an eco-friendly green house.
Right.
And it would be up to them to save up their money for materials. But I've made contacts with other communities, and they would actually send men and probably maybe women, and they would all stay in the home, and I would just have to house and feed them. But they would be here on site to build, help us build the person's home.
Wow. Okay, that now that sounds wonderful, because I've known of people who were doing the earth bag homes, which I'm fascinated by, and this one man was doing it pretty much by himself, and maybe a couple people would help him, but it wasn't like a concentrated effort. It was taking months. You're talking about a week or two, and I mean.
And they could have a house up. I'm hoping.
Right.
I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Just depending on how many people they could be able to send out. And also here in my local pagan association, I've already got three or four men that do construction work, and they're looking forward to building the first house.
Oh, that's wonderful. No,
there would be a crew of people to build a house.
That's fabulous, because I've known a couple people who really want to do something like this, but they don't have the physical ability themselves.
Correct. No, these would all be volunteers. There would be no out of pocket other than giving them a space to sleep and
feeding them,
putting some food in their tummies every day.
Right. Well, speaking
and this is what it should be about, is everybody helping each other out.
That's what community means.
That's exactly right.
And now you have, like, you're not off the grid right now.
I'm not. But that would be the goal, is eventually then I would also save up and be able to build my own home. And it would be, we would be off grid, solar power, windmill,
yeah,
wells, whatever we can do. Now, I'm not willing to give up my phone and my cable and my internet. So I would be semi off grid. I just have to have some of those connections. But
right.
The
well,
big house that I'm in, my dream would be eventually it would be more of a community house.
Right.
And then this space in this house would be for other travelers coming through, whether you're a pagan or a retired hippie or an artist or a rock star, mm-hmm. and you just want to come visit. You would just pay a small fee daily to stay in the house. Beds would be supplied for you and food. Also, I have the intention of renting space out to possibly like massage therapists, tarot readers, Reiki healers, people who maybe don't want to have a shop down on Main Street.
Right.
If they would kind of want to be out here, since it's still considered some alternative type of things.
Right.
They would be able to bring their clients out here, and everybody could have a very relaxed feeling.
Right, because you're not that far out of how far to start with is Cobden from Carbondale?
We are about 25 minutes away from Carbondale.
Okay, you yourself.
Yes.
Then how far are you from Cobden?
Cobden is only about 5 miles away.
Oh, okay.
It's a very small town, maybe 400 to 500 people.
Oh, all right.
And then going the other way, a little bit further south of me, is a little town called Anna, which is probably, we're looking at maybe 25,000 to 30,000 people.
Right. Yeah, I know just a bit then about the area, because an ex of mine's mother was from Anna.
Oh, okay.
She always got down there whenever she could. She really missed. In fact, she lives around the area that you used to. She lives in Kankakee.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So.
Yes. I lived there many years myself, in between the St. Anne and the Cobden move.
Ah, okay. So that's, well, yeah, it's very different. Even though Kankakee isn't that large, with Kankakee and Bradley and Bourbonnais, it's got a few people, and it's larger than the area you're in. Although, like you said, okay, 25 miles from university, or Southern University. So a lot of people would potentially be able, it's just a half-hour drive then out to your place for massage or Reiki or whatever.
Correct.
So that's pretty close, actually.
Right.
And Anna with another population. So actually, some of the body workers and healers would probably really benefit from this. Now, you have already cleared enough space, or there's already space cleared, because you only moved in the fall, right?
Correct. Correct, I did.
So you haven't done the whole year and a day there yet.
No. But there is space already cleared if people were to get here this. I mean, I will have a garden regardless.
Yeah,
but if I have
the garden, yeah.
Oh, yes. But if I have more people here by planting time, we could have about a 4 to 5 acre garden because there is some empty acreage without trees up closer to the road.
Right. Wow.
And that would be the long-term plan, is to do bigger farming on a much bigger scale.
Well, that, I mean, you know, we can grow a lot in a small space. So you're talking 4 or 5 acres. You can supply half of Southern Illinois.
Well, and that's kind of the goal. We actually have a co-op grocery here in Carbondale, and they only like to buy local. So part of being self-sustainable would be selling our produce to that co-op grocery store to have income coming in.
Right.
And then hopefully we can recruit local restaurant owners that would want to buy fresh organic vegetables and fruits.
Right, because so many restaurants now are really trying to do that. And
correct.
You know, You have a perfect opportunity then to, when the community gets going, to actually do classes and things in different things, whether it's organic gardening or, you know, whatever, to do with your land.
Well, and also I think the house is big enough we could do classes on anything anybody wanted, you know, even a class on crystals or pagan classes, Wiccan classes. The house is unlimited for any type of thing. And then also on the gardening, years down the road, I would like to see us have an indoor growing facility so that we could produce veggies throughout the whole year.
Yes. That you know, it's so, we feel so limited, and we're not nearly as limited as some places, but in the winter when you can't get fresh, like I refuse to buy tomatoes in the winter because
me too. Yeah.
Because I mean, I don't need that cardboard. You know, the good thing was this year I had picked tomatoes at the end, a bunch of green tomatoes.
Uh-huh.
And just letting them slowly ripen. I don't heat my house really, really hot. And you know what? I still have some of them. So
you are very blessed then. Because
you know,
I'm purchasing some fresh tomatoes.
Yes, in January. And I think I have enough, to finish out this month and probably a little bit into February.
Mm.
And so I do feel so blessed. And I'm just saying it's all because I don't have my heat turned up to 85 degrees.
Well,
But no, because otherwise, no, I just won't buy them. And I've been at people's, you know, houses, or we've gone shopping and they want to get tomatoes. And it's like, well, get them if you want, you know.
I'm not eating those. Well, and it's starting to scare me with this GMO and the Monsanto and all the genetically modified food. I want to get away from that. Eventually, you know, have cattle so we could have our fresh beef. I don't eat pork, but if people want pork, and of course we'd have chickens for chicken and eggs.
That's a big thing that, you know, so you make sure that, yeah, people know that, because those of us who are vegan would not have an interest then.
Right.
You know, so it's important to the things that you really want, people need to know about that, you know, and your. Any kind of rules or regulations? How do you feel about the alcohol and drugs and things?
Well, moderation in all things.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 16-year-old son that lives here, so I personally don't drink. I have in the past, but I don't want people stumbling around drunk or stoned. I don't. But
right.
My other thing is, I don't want to put my community at risk of getting in trouble.
Yes.
Because it comes down to, I'm the one that's going to be responsible.
Right.
And, I can't monitor everyone's usage in their homes,
yeah.
But out in public space, it wouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. And, I mean, it's one of those things, you know, you don't want somebody growing things and selling off your property. I had a girlfriend whose family lost their home in Chicago years ago because her brother was dealing drugs.
Correct.
But
I don't want anyone to think like my plan kind of is maybe the first four families or individuals that would commit to this, we would be the core or the founding group.
Mm-hmm.
We would make rules and decisions together. It's not like I'm going to be Hitler and come down with the rules.
Yeah.
There has to be a core group, and we would have to make vote on decisions and exactly how we'd want things run.
Yeah. No, I think that's very good because it's as much as you want it to be pretty freewheeling and all, you still, I mean, anything has to have rules. You have rules with the son. You know, I mean, it's just some rules are spoken, some aren't. Something like this, they need to be written. So now you said that you wouldn't necessarily require people to be pagan to come and stay for something or passing through, but do you want your people, your individuals, and the families to be pagan who live on the property?
You know, preference, yes, but it's not necessary. As long as you're open-minded, freewheeling, I personally am not a gun person, so I don't want someone who's real gun, you know, into guns. And because actually this is there is no gun usage on this property at all. You can only hunt with bow and arrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But,
yeah.
Preferably a pagan village, but if you... artists end up here. I don't have a problem with that as long as everyone's open-minded and doesn't matter if some of us that are Wiccan do a ritual outside.
Right. Nobody's going to freak out. I mean, you get kind of freedom. This sounds just really...
And let me mention, too, this is would be a community where there could be children. Because someone asked me about new...
Well, Karen Laurent is with us, and she's going to talk about a dream that she has, and it sounds wonderful to me. We did not get to finish the very end of that interview. My mistake. So you can, make sure you can listen to it. Karen did ask me afterwards to say that the veganism could still be an option there. That what she was talking about was just what somebody had mentioned to her, but she herself would like to have the few people who would make up the first few people who come and make up sort of a council would decide on that type of thing. So we will have her back, and we're going to keep in touch. You can find her on Facebook, Karen, Laurent. You're listening to Aramarte Theo on blogtalkradio.com. So this is a lady with a dream, and now we have a man going to talk with us about a miracle. Well, now tonight we have with us Miracle Story. Bilal Marcus is with us from www.miraclecomeback.com, and he's going to tell us what has actually been a miracle in his life and the life of his family. I think it's changed a lot of things for him. So welcome, Bilal.
Hello. Thanks for having me on.
Yes. I read your story, actually your son's story, and it was amazing, and you have been getting a lot of, press. You're in some papers, on the radio. You've written a book. You have this website, miraclecomeback.com. Would you just give us a little background before we get into what happened in August of 2009?
Okay, you want me to go on a little bit what happened prior, what caused what happened in 2009?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Actually, I got divorced in mid-2008 and became a single father of three. I live in Milwaukee, by the way. And I moved from the north side to the south side with my children, and which is two boys and my daughter, Yasmin. And the side of town that I moved on the south side, wasn't the best. It was okay at first, but my older son started getting involved with gangs and dragged his little brother into it, Rashid.
Yeah.
And this went on for about less than a year until the accident itself happened, which was a part of being involved in gangs on August 3rd, 2009, where my son, Rashid, followed his brother where he wasn't supposed to be and was run over by two SUVs on his bicycle.
So he was on his bike when he was, and he was, like you say, where he wasn't supposed to be, but, I mean, that doesn't make it any easier or better or anything.
Yes.
How did you find out that he was run over or in the hospital?
Well, what it was is at the time we had moved away from that area after I got my son. You know, on August 2nd, we moved away about 5 miles south from that area where this later occurred the next day. And I didn't have a car, so my boys were supposed to be riding their bicycles out in our new neighborhood, and they came back 5 miles to where we just moved from.
Right.
And so later that night when I'm waiting for my wondering where my boys are, I heard a yell through the window at about 11:45 p.m. from my older son yelling up the window, that just yelling my name. And I ran downstairs, and he was with a friend's mother who drove him there because he knew I didn't have a car. My phone was dead, and brought me to the accident scene of 16th and Greenfield where it happened. And we had gotten there late because he had already been taken by ambulance to Children's Hospital. This was August 3rd, 2009.
So it had been a little while, but not all that long. What condition was he in when you got to the hospital, Bilal?
Pretty much when I talked to the surgeons, like 2 hours later, like around 1 to 2 a.m., they pretty much gave me 5% or less that he would survive, because he was pretty much getting me ready to say goodbye to him, because he had given me two options. One, he was basically not going to make it. He looked pretty sure about that. The second was he wasn't going to be the same boy that I remember, which means to me the way he looked, like paralyzed, brain dead, or what have you.
Right.
And that's pretty much how I viewed it.
Well, so then, as I understand it, you got online right away.
Yes, I did.
You want to tell us about that?
Yeah, it was something in my mind that I felt was his only chance. And that's when I got online on Facebook and emails and asked everyone, my friends around the world and family here and friends here, to pray for him, that he survive, pray for him to survive, and if he doesn't, that he goes to heaven. And that's pretty much all I could do. I was pretty much helpless at the time, but that's what made me stronger, was hoping that the prayers would save him.
Right. And you already had quite a worldwide community.
Yes.
That you could call upon. You had converted to Islam in 1993, I believe.
Yes, a year before I moved up here from Florida. I moved from Florida in 1994. It was about a year prior.
Oh, okay. And so your children were brought up knowing this, but
yes.
Since you'd had the problems with your marriage and everything, so the children probably weren't like staunch Muslims at the time then, and involved
in faith. Their mother was Muslim too.
Oh, she was. Okay. So
yes.
Were they going to the mosque and things, or I mean, the older
boys? Yes, they were on the weekends.
Okay, so even though the one was involved in the gangs, I mean, he was still going to.
I see what you're saying. During the gangs, the period for the few months or 6 months, it was really difficult to get him to do anything with me. I see what you're talking about, but mm-hmm. I tried.
Yeah. Well, it's very hard. It's hard raising children nowadays with both parents there all the time. But
yes.
Single parenting is extremely hard. I think people don't realize what that entails.
Yes.
How long was Rashid in the hospital then?
It's kind of funny. Well, it's not funny, but it's surprising. He got in there on August 3rd, and when I was ready to bury him, which I had to say, that's how I felt.
Oh, my God.
By August, I think it was 9th, his eyes opened up. By the 11th, he woke up, was standing up. By the 17th, they were ready to send him home, and that kind of startled me because I wasn't prepared. So I made him hold off until the 25th of August because I had no idea what to do, how to take care of him or what.
Oh, yeah. I mean, but you were so happy. It's like, well, yeah, we'll figure it out. But
yeah,
he had to have certain care then at home for a while too?
I had a friend who was a doctor and a nurse. She was a stay-at-home mom, and she was all her husband and then worked together. And they watched him for a little while as I worked. Very nice on the north side. But what's that?
No, that was wonderful that you had somebody that close to you that could help.
Yeah, they helped me, but it was basically he was just weak. I mean, it wasn't that he needed special care to be picked up. He just needed to get his strength back, and
yeah.
He lost a lot of weight.
Okay, you talked about he went through right there, right after the accident in the hospital, over 40 pints of blood.
Yeah, he lost 46 pints of blood in surgery. Yeah, it was something I never knew about. I mean, until I started organizing blood drives myself, I started learning more about it.
Right, because, an average is such a silly word, but you know they say a person has about 10 pints or so. So
yeah.
He was being transfused continually and just kept losing it.
Yes.
So that
and
was,
there's more of the story that I really didn't talk about. My best friend's wife was a surgeon technician that night, and she didn't even know she was working on Rashid till halfway through the surgery. It almost blew her mind when she read his name on the chart.
Wow.
So there's a lot to the story, yeah. And then people from out of state, all the way from New Jersey and Mississippi, Minnesota, to drive and see him that never met him before. I didn't know, but online.
Wow.
So it was an amazing thing.
It has been. Well, how has this then strengthened your faith, that of your sons and daughter? I know you're married now.
Yes, thanks to Rashid. Yeah, I actually knew the lady. I met the lady prior to the accident online. She was helping me doing translations from Indonesia. I have another website. And when Rashid's accident happened, she automatically started sending me medicines and natural things to take care of my honeys and stuff like that. And that right there, I knew that this was the wife and mother for my children and for myself.
Okay. So
I went there in November of 2011. We got married in December 2011.
Okay.
A year ago. Yeah, we got married a year ago in Indonesia.
Yeah. Wow. Okay. Exotic tropical wedding. That's what we like. Yeah. So, well, how else? Because, I mean, that was brought along anyway then by the accident. What other changes have happened in your life and your sons and the rest of the families?
I'm very close to my mother, a lot closer to closer to my family. My kids, I mean, we're so attached now, and they've changed 100%. I mean, they're constantly reminded, not just by me, but by other people that know them. As to, if they see him doing something wrong, they're constantly reminding him about, his second chance and you know, we got a celebrity on our side that's making a song for us that my son's going to be involved in soon, which will be done in about 2 weeks. You know, so an Oprah show, Oprah magazine editors want to hear the song. So, I mean, it's a lot of fun stuff and a lot of stuff I'm hoping we can help people, you know, that were in our shoes, if not worse.
Right, because it's been a very good force then, and for the family. Oftentimes people say, you know, after some very traumatic experience that they're glad it happened, even mm-hmm. it was so horrendous at the time, and, you know, your heart was just breaking. And I would think that you all feel this way too.
Yes. And I had only a couple, a lot of people, you know, out of all the people that support me, only two of them were like, why are you doing this? If I was you, I would just stop. But people don't understand until you're on my shoes, you know, what I went through and what my son went through and how we can help others. I mean, it's just like, it's a good moment for us. And I don't want to, you know, cover it up and pretend it never happened.
Right. That whole thing about moving on with your life, it's like you are moving on with your life. And it's sort of... I don't want to use the word payback in this situation, but it is. I mean, you're very grateful. And mm-hmm. so this is another way of giving thanks.
Yes.
By making it known. Now, you have written a children's book, I believe.
Yeah, I've actually went through three artists prior to my ex-brother-in-law being my final artist. Yeah, it started, my idea came in my head in 2010. Fox 6 had Fox 6 News in Milwaukee. He started promoting it, and finally it's done. It's called Miracle on Greenfield.
Okay.
And go ahead, I'm sorry.
Wait, I was just going to ask, how can people find this?
Actually, it's not out as far as being published yet, but we got a local publisher that's looking at it right now, and it's going to take a few months before it's out.
Okay.
But
okay.
It will be on my website for sure.
All right. Yeah. About what age groups are we looking at for this? Since
I'm looking at, I put down 8 to 11.
Okay. And that's, I think it's good for kids to hear real stories, not just the fictional, and, you know, have the ability maybe to actually get in touch with people that the story about. I think that can make a big difference. What's the name of the song?
So far, it's called 46 Pints.
Ah, okay.
I was going to take the I was going to take Second Chance as the name, but I trust Elvis, the one who's doing it. He knows what he's talking about, so I'm totally agree with whatever he does because he's really good at what he does.
Okay, and you said then that should be out in a couple weeks?
I'm going to go to the studio next week, and hopefully the week after that, we're going to get it done in a day.
Ah, okay.
Yeah, I'm coming up with a female singer who's going to be on there with him. We found a singer. He wanted a singer, so we got someone who was in a church choir before. He's got a very good voice. And then he wanted me to gather about 8 to 12 children between the ages of 7 and 12 to be in a certain part of the song. So I got that together. So we're going to have, it's going to be like We Are the World kind of inspiring song.
Okay. Well, that's really good. Where do you hope to market the song?
You know what? I'm going to talk to him about it this week and see how we can do this because I'm doing stuff worldwide, so it's got to go worldwide. But as far as marketing it, I'm going to talk to him because this is my first song. This is my first book. I feel like I was just born, so I don't know. I don't know too much about this stuff yet.
All right.
So I'll definitely keep in touch with you and let you know.
Yeah, because I mean, I know that sometimes, you know, people just that you want to get it out there, so you're not really interested in making money on it. But it's like, well, you know, expenses and things. It would be nice to get a little cash coming in.
Yeah, well, I'm paying for the whole thing. Yeah, so it'll help me if I can get at least what I put into it back. That's all I'm asking.
Right. This is not you haven't grabbed onto this experience and to make your fortune. That's not the idea.
I want to look at it that way. I wasted my money then because I put a lot of money into this and I haven't gotten a penny back. So
right.
Yeah, it's not about the money.
Yeah. much. Well, it's doing something that you feel almost compelled to do.
Yes.
And so, no, definitely, you know, and travel and all, I mean, there's a lot of expenses that are involved. So, yes, you know, getting that back will be wonderful.
Well, yeah, I take days off to organize blood drives and stuff like that. I'm not making any money doing blood drives, but it's something that's needed.
Yeah, it really is. I've had at 3 different times transfusions, and we figured I've got, you know, several people's blood in me now. And I really do. Yeah, it's harder and harder now to get a transfusion. Well, I mean, it takes time because they have to deal with what I already have going on in it now. But it's so important, and I think that people have forgotten, or they think, well, you know, there's alternatives to the blood and blah blah blah, and there are.
Wow.
However, sometimes you need blood.
Yes.
It is important.
60% of the people are available, can donate, but only less than 5% actually do. That's sad.
It really is. And because there's nothing to it. I've heard people say that they don't like needles. And, you know, I just have to laugh because I remember one time I wrote a poem in the hospital about when I saw them come in with that blood. I mean, I was so happy because, they had to do some work on it so I could accept it. And, you know, it was just like, oh, this is wonderful. But people don't realize, and you know, giving a pint of blood for the person who gets it, you know, it can save their life. And
yes.
If you don't, you know, they'll give you some orange juice afterwards. I mean, it's not like you're not going to go through a whole horrible thing. Not like you're touching bone marrow or something.
Actually,
you know,
it's good for you. It's actually good for you too.
Yeah, you know, peps you up, makes you make some fresh blood.
It's like an oil change.
yeah. So that's really good, and it's good that you've been organizing. Now, are you doing that like? In his name, is his name out there, Rashid?
Actually, well, his picture is on the posters and stuff like that, and his little story is on there. But it's actually called Miracle Comeback, and I did 8 of them already, Miracle Comeback 1, Miracle Comeback 2, and I'm working on Miracle Comeback 9.
Wow.
And this is going to be the best one of all because Rashid is going to give back for the first time. He's going to donate and involve the youth. The media really wants to be there. So we'll have the media, and we're going to try to let Rashid, you know, bring all his school, you know, team with him and get this going. This would be real big news.
No, that's wonderful. And those, the ones that you've been organizing, well, personally anyway, are in the Milwaukee area.
Yes, and actually, now that you just said that, I've been trying to get people to do it outside of Milwaukee, you know, my name, you know, Miracle Comeback, and New York, a friend, someone I don't know from online is organizing 2 of them. One in April, March, and one in April in New York.
That's wonderful.
I love that.
Anytime we see then around the world, Miracle Comeback Blood Drive, we'll know that this is...
I hope it goes worldwide.
Yeah, well, I think that... I mean, I just have a feeling about that, too, because you do have such a community out there.
Yeah.
And this has been so nice talking with you. We're talking with Bilal Marcus from www.miraclecomeback.com. And I'd like to thank you for coming on, and we hope to talk with you again.
Thank you very much. I would be happy to come back on.
Okay.
We will have Karen Lorenz's full interview at 60 minutes to the hour.
Okay.
But right now, yay, we have Janet K. Smith with us. And we're going to be having you on for this spot every month to tell us what you are doing toward your election. And then after that... So first, I'd like to say that you do live in Belleville, which is across the river from St. Louis.
Sort of. Southeast of St. Louis, yeah.
It's
Well, it's southeast. About how far are you from the river, the Mississippi?
About, I don't know, 15 miles southeast, 20 miles.
Yeah. So you're actually down not too far from where our first guest is from.
Well, yeah, we're fair piece. I think, I mean, was she saying she's near Carbondale?
You're northwest of her.
Yeah, she's probably a good, oh, my God, Carbondale's like 2.5 hours from here.
Yeah.
Illinois is a really long state.
You know, you're both considered southern Illinois. So.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but, you know, it's like it is different. I mean, there's some people consider us.
It's the area. But
it's so big. There are some people that, I mean, I might be one of them that might be more inclined to say we were central Illinois in a way. But I don't know.
Look on the map and see where St. Louis is and Belleville there. It's the southern third. But how
like
big
I said,
is Belleville?
We're at the top of the southern third, though. So
could you tell me?
That's weird. How big? About 44,000.
44,000. Okay. And now you've been involved in politics there for quite some time, actually. Haven't you? Something happened. She'll be back. I'm thinking, because I know she's been working with the Democratic Party for quite some time down there, and this is her first run for the alderman, woman, alderperson position. So...
Okay, I don't know what happened there.
I was asking, I said, you've been involved in politics there for a while.
Yes, to a degree. You know, we were talking that we would talk about getting involved on a local level.
Exactly.
I got involved, I was interested in politics years ago and had participated with one of the two major parties as a precinct committeeman at that time and working for one of the governors of Illinois as a volunteer coordinator. And I got very disillusioned about politics and gave it up for a while. And then shortly after Al Gore had the presidency stolen from him in 2000, I read a book by Michael Moore called Stupid White Men or Angry White Men. I don't remember the name of it.
Right, yeah.
And at the back of the book, he's like, are you pissed off? Are you angry? Well, here's what you need to do. He said, get involved. And he said, even if it is getting involved as a precinct committeeman. And I thought, that's interesting. Well, the primary was then very shortly after I read this book. And I noticed that we did not have a Democratic precinct committeeman. And so I actually had a little one-day write-in campaign. My daughter and I walked around the block and asked people to go vote for me, not knowing the law at the time that in order to run as a write-in, you have to have filed several months before the election, even though you're not. Like, for example, to file as a candidate printed on the ballot, the deadline was December 26th, but I believe it's February 9th or February 2nd. If February 2nd is a weekday, that's the deadline to file as a write-in. So, but even so, I got like 15 votes and that was counting me and my husband. So 13 people voted for me just because I knocked on the door and said, hey, would you go vote for me? I want to be one.
That's wonderful. I mean, just doing that, so that shows you the potential.
Yeah, and so then a few days after the election, I called the election office at our county clerk's office and said, you know, I know this means nothing, but what do I do? And they said, well, yeah, it doesn't mean anything, but you did get, you know, 15 votes. So contact the head of the Democratic Party and tell him you want to be one. They don't have one. So I did, and I was instantly appointed to fill the vacancy, and that would have been 11 years, so it would have been 2002, the spring of 2002. Yeah. So I'm serving in my 11th year as precinct committeeman, which is a very low-ranking elected official. It is. You have nothing. You help run the elections. You get election judges.
But you were elected these last times, and now you're running for alderperson.
Yeah, I decided, I got to meet people, and I don't know. Our city's divided into wards, like Chicago would be, and every ward has two aldermen though, and we're up in alternate every 2 years. One of them's up.
Wow.
And the one that we have right now is very unresponsive to the people. A lot of people complain about her. I think our current the mayor and his current alder of his party or whatever you want to call it, they feel they have a rubber stamp. They have a job for life, and they're not responsible to the people. And there are some of us who feel that's wrong. The idea that they have, seriously, many issues are not debated in open forum in front of the public, which by law they should be.
I thought that's illegal, yeah.
It is illegal, and Lisa Madigan, the Attorney General, is supposedly looking into a couple episodes of it. But, I mean, when somebody comes out and they put up an issue and they vote without discussion, you know they've talked about it before. And the other issue we have is we have a rising crime rate in our town. We are a quote-unquote all-American city, which is not as cool as you might think it would be. There's a National Chamber of Commerce group that names people. And actually, that's a kiss of death in Illinois.
Really?
A lot of the cities that have been named the all-American city, like East St. Louis and Granite City, began a decline right afterward. So the mayor in our town has a high school education. He brags that he does not know how to use a computer and does not know how to use email. And he would like to, but he also told the paper he'd like to be mayor for life because he enjoys it. And it's like, well, hell yeah, he enjoys it. He's making almost $100,000 a year, and he actually hired with city money a quote-unquote email secretary.
Oh, my God, Janet.
And meanwhile, a couple weeks ago, without debating this in open forum, the city spent $159,000 to buy a vacant store at the edge of our town. It's been vacant for years, and they paid above the assessed value for it without debate because he's going to tear it down and make a green space. All right. When we have a police department that vitally needs updated technology and they need more space, and that the fire department has been called to the police station at least 4 times because of hot wires, because they are in a building that is not designed for the technology they're using, and $159,000 plus the $33,000 to tear the building down would have really helped out our police department. They also have a tendency, I mean, we have city attorneys from Chicago, which is kind of ludicrous. Chicago is a lovely city. I love it with all my heart. I was born there. It is a little over 5 hours from here. We have plenty of attorneys locally who might work for less.
Sure.
And they also have an issue, I don't know if you're familiar with TIF, or tax increment financing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, and for our listeners, that's public financing, which is used to subsidize redevelopment, infrastructure, and other community improvement projects.
And in many places, Belleville, it is so abused.
Right, Belleville has about 44,000 people as of the last census. We have 18 property tax TIF districts plus a sales tax TIF. The only city in Illinois with more TIFs than Belleville is Chicago. The TIFs, indirectly, I pay more taxes. I mean, I just did my federal taxes today, so I was looking at my property tax bill, and I pay considerably more than my mother, who lives in another small town in southern Illinois, pays, and arguably she has a better house than I do.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of, you know, nice roof, all kind of everything, better
Maybe
school
location.
District.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, school district.
And,
yeah.
I mean, they have declared TIF so they could blight a farmer's field so they could put up a stupid Walmart.
Yep.
All right. We have, they, you know, have worked hard to get homeless out of our town. We have a, you know, old building, like it's called the Turner's Hall, which housed a YMCA. It's a beautiful building. The mayor would like to tear it down and make a parking lot because it would be convenient for his wife's business.
Oh, that's lovely.
If
you would tell us, so some of the things that you're doing, like month by month, what did you do this month toward? Now, I think that because you're running for this office, you are almost required to go to more meetings and things, aren't you?
I am. That's one thing I've started doing. Either I or my chief of staff, which is what I call my husband now when we're talking politics. He likes it.
Sure.
And he promises to be more like Rahm Emanuel than Karl Rove.
Oh, well, yeah.
It's just a joke. Well. I thought it was funny. And we know we started going to meetings. I had a picture tech, and we're getting our literature is finished, and we will start this weekend. When I say we, I am running alone for alderman, but I am also part of a coalition of some independent candidates. We are not Democrats. We are not Republicans for city government. We are residents who want a better, more transparent city government.
And
we are
government, isn't it?
I'm sorry?
What don't you, isn't it called, oh no, that was something else. Don't you have a name for this group?
We do. We are the United Independent Coalition for all of Belleville.
Okay.
And, you know, this way working together, we can, well, save money on literature for one thing. We can raise money together. We have a PAC now. I'm a member of a PAC to raise funds. And we're having our first big fundraiser of our own next Thursday. The man running for mayor that I support has already had a couple. And we're having a fundraiser with a, you know, hors d'oeuvres and a cash bar and any donation, as opposed to other local politicians even running for small city office that might charge $100-$125 a ticket for cheap beer and hors d'oeuvres.
Right.
So you can buy your own cocktail, and we just want as many people involved as possible. I was approached because I had developed a reputation of working hard as precinct committeeman, of getting the vote out. And, you know, I know there's people that don't like me, but by and large, there are people that like me. And I, you know, thought this would be an interesting way to serve the community. Okay, we actually are up to, I'm sorry, I misspoke. We have about 45,000, so I don't know. I've heard both. But, I mean, we have a website for our city, which is needs to be grow. It's never, I don't know, it's never up to date, which I think is bullshit. We spend a great deal.
Myself, yeah.
We spend money. And then, you know, another thing, the current, I got to share this. I told it to you the other day, and you went, like, insane when I told you. The current mayor and his rubber stamp members of the city council want to have an ordinance where we have occupancy permits for renters. And they would like to have everybody register every person in your house with City Hall. And if you have more than what they feel the house holds, they can tell you to get rid of people, or you have to build on, or you have to move.
So if you're a couple and you have two children, and whether by accident or not, you are going to have another one, but your house is only supposedly it can only hold four, you either have to dump the kid, or move, or build on. If you
right.
can commit.
Right, and you know how it is. If you know, you might actually, like I was telling you for an example, my house might be designed to hold four people. You know, and then, if we had a third child, I could see that there's a way to make room. You know, this would work. And if you own your home, I mean, it's just basically a tenant in America, I think. When you own property, it's yours.
Well, we
used to
say that, but it doesn't really, I mean, they can take it away from you, or just like this ridiculous thing. They can either send your kid off to live with your parents, or build on, or move.
And the police would like to know, I mean, the police chief is saying he'd like to know who's in every house. And it's like...
And that's bullshit, too. Talk about lack of privacy.
It's an end run around getting a search warrant, I think, is the way they're really trying to use this housing ordinance. So, you know, I don't know. It's just, it seems like the... Oh, and I have to throw this out. They used... the city spent almost $1 million, that's right, almost $1 million, to buy a lovely piece of property that used to be a fishing club that was worth about $225,000, okay, to turn it into a park.
Sure, so
there was,
what it's worth. Something that
people... What else we did? You know, we got together. We're having a media training in the very near future. I'm speaking to you now on an interview with a media person, and I haven't been trained, so I hope I'm doing a good job.
Yeah.
But no, We're going to do that. And then we also have a plan to how we're going to work the city to contact voters and get information to them about who we are. And then following up to make sure everybody's registered to vote, make sure people have rides to the poll, and basically doing a very good get the vote out.
Right. Well, so now the end of February when you come on, you can tell us, you know, more like it's getting closer and closer. But
yeah, we'll
right
have
now,
more meetings.
It's probably too late for most people in most areas in this country to get in on the spring elections. But how soon before the next round would you advise somebody, if they haven't ever run in any local election?
Well, find out when your city elections are held. In Illinois, a lot of city elections are always held in the spring, not in...
How far ahead would you
I would say you better start planning it a good 6 months, because you need to find out what the law is. In Illinois, in my city, I had to have so many signatures. I had to have between 23 and 37 signatures to get on the ballot of registered voters, and I had to have papers filed. So,
and
you know, you want to...
I did want to tell people that in many places, you really need to get many more signatures than that, because they may throw some out.
Well, you see, you have to check with your what your local law is. It varies, because, and it varies in Illinois from local elections to federal elections to state elections. I believe to run for a federal U.S. representative, you need 600 signatures. I could be wrong, but I think that's what it is. And then, obviously, I needed between 23 and 37. And if I had 38, that would have automatically disqualified me, all right? And I think one of the things people...
If some of those, if they actually checked and they weren't any good...
They would check. Be prepared. They will triple check.
Right, because when somebody just goes out and, you know, with petitions, I've had people tell me that, you know, they got a high percentage of them were knocked off. Because you're
right
in a shopping mall somewhere, you, your people, you're having people sign... And these people are not all going to be counted,
right?
So,
right. I think people, if you want to get involved, you should start going to your local government meetings. If it's city council, go to that.
Okay.
If it's a county board, go to that. And get a feel for what the things are like and meet people. Volunteer. If you're a Democrat, volunteer with your local Democratic group. If you're a Republican, God help you, volunteer with them. And,
if you're a Republican, stay home, is that?
Yeah. And, you know, meet people. And if around the country, there are independent groups and the Green Party and so and various others, if you have that going in your area and that's what interests you, get a hold of those people. Find them online. And volunteer, and you will meet people, and everybody wants to be president, but I think, or, you know, a state, you know, or you want to be senator, or you want to be whatever, right? Mm-hmm. But when it comes down to it, the local, the county, and your city, and your school board, these are the things that greatly affect people's lives on a
right
much more of a local level,
yeah,
and it's much more attainable.
Right,
and
change comes from the ground up. I want to say, would you tell us where your radio station is?
I have a show here on Facebook. It really has nothing to do with politics, but I think I'm entertaining, so you might enjoy it. It's called Coffee Break with Janet Schmidt. It's on every morning from 11 a.m. to 12 noon Central Time. And you can find me on Facebook at Barefoot Domestic Goddess. You can also find me at Schmidt for Alderman. That is my aldermanic page, and if you would take the time to like that page, I would be eternally grateful. No one knows who my likers are, but I would like to get my numbers up. That's actually what I'm working on this week. That's another thing, because we are going to be using social media a great deal, of getting Twitter set up and getting Facebook pages and stuff like that, and then to start advertising them. So,
that's excellent.
Anyway, but...
So, okay, those, and we will put those on the Air Mark FEO Facebook page and
cool
a couple other places. So we'll see you back here the end of February for more.
I will be here.
Stick on Gather Round. So thank you very much.
Thank you, Ruthann. Good night, everybody.
Good night. we are going to play Karen Lorentz interview in full now. So
with us and check our Facebook page later for all this information.
Well, Karen Laurent is with us, and she's going to talk about a dream that she has, and it sounds wonderful to me. So she's looking ahead to the future. Hello, Karen.
Hello.
I'm so glad you came in tonight. Thank you
for having me.
Well, I'm excited about this because I'm a big fan of eco-villages, and I think that that's what you're aiming for. We should start with, you're originally from the St. Anne, Illinois area, right?
Correct.
And now you are in southern, really southern Illinois, out of a place called Cobden. What made you, you know, pull up and head south?
Actually, my daughter came down to do orientation at the college in Carbondale.
Ah, Southern Illinois. Yeah.
Yes, and I fell in love with the area. But this has kind of been my dream to find some acreage to build on my dream. And when we came down here, we were able to look at this property, and I fell in love with it.
Mm-hmm. Now, the Southern Illinois, I think there's a lot of national forests and things down there.
Yes. My property actually sits on the Shawnee National Forest.
Okay.
And anybody can look up of the Trail of Tears. I believe it was back in like 1831.
Mm-hmm.
My property is actually part of the Trail of Tears. And that's where the Indians, where the Americans kind of were pushing the Indians.
Right, that was the Cherokee, which I have Cherokee blood in me, so yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, it was a horrible, horrible thing that...
Yes, a lot of them died. Thousands died.
Yeah. So, but then your country is actually beautiful down there. Now, you have some acreage, right?
Correct. I have 28 acres here. The majority of it's pretty wooded,
mm-hmm.
but then there's also on the property some cliffs and some caves and ravines.
Wow.
And there's actually two waterfalls. They're not real big, but of course it has to rain quite a bit before we get to see the water and the waterfalls.
Right. That's wonderful, and you've even got caves, so you've pretty much got it. Now, you have on the property, there is a house, right?
Yes, yes. There's the current owners, there was a house built here. So, yes, my son and I live in the house. It's a rather large house. Anybody that would like to come down and visit is welcome to stay in the house while they're here visiting. And if they made the choice to actually move here, they would be able to reside in the house. We could split expenses in this house, and then each individual could save up their own money to buy materials, and then they would build their own eco-friendly green home.
Okay. Now, what do you just envision? What kind of houses do you envision people building?
My only requirement is that they have to be as green as possible, whether they're straw bale houses, cob houses, houses that are built into the earth, any kind of just an eco-friendly green house.
Right.
And it would be up to them to save up their money for materials. But
mm-hmm.
I've made contacts with other communities, and they would actually send men and probably maybe women, and they would all stay in the home, and I would just have to house and feed them. But they would be here on site to build, help us build the person's home.
Wow. Okay, that sounds wonderful, because I've known of people who were doing the earth bag homes, which I'm fascinated by, and this one man was doing it pretty much by himself, and maybe a couple people would help him, but it wasn't like a concentrated effort. It was taking months. You're talking about a week or two, and I mean.
And they could have a house up. I'm hoping.
Right.
I'm hoping.
Yeah.
Just depending on how many people they could be able to send out. And also here in my local pagan association, I've already got three or four men that do construction work, and they're looking forward to building the first house.
Oh, that's wonderful. No,
so, yeah, there would be a crew of people to build a house.
That's fabulous, because I've known a couple people who really want to do something like this, but they don't have the physical ability themselves.
Correct. No, these would all be volunteers. There would be no out-of-pocket other than giving them a space to sleep and
feeding,
putting some food in their tummies every day.
Right. Well, speaking
of, this is what it should be about, is everybody helping each other out.
That's what community means.
That's exactly right.
And now you have, like, you're not off the grid right now.
I'm not, but right. That would be the goal, is eventually then I would also save up and be able to build my own home. And it would be, we would be off grid, solar power, windmill,
yeah,
wells, whatever we can do. Now, I'm not willing to give up my phone and my cable and my internet. So I would be semi off grid. I just have to have some of those connections. But
right.
The
well,
big house that I'm in, my dream would be eventually it would be more of a community house.
Right.
And then this space in this house would be for other travelers coming through, whether you're a pagan or a retired hippie or an artist or a rock star, mm-hmm. and you just want to come visit. You would just pay a small fee daily to stay in the house. Beds would be supplied for you and food. Also, I have the intention of renting space out to possibly like massage therapists, tarot readers, Reiki healers, people who maybe don't want to have a shop down on Main Street.
Right.
If they would kind of want to be out here, since it's still considered some alternative type of things.
Right.
They would be able to bring their clients out here, and everybody could have a very relaxed feeling.
Right, because you're not that far out of how far to start with is Cobden from Carbondale?
We are about 25 minutes away from Carbondale.
Okay, you yourself.
Yes.
Then how far are you from Cobden?
Cobden is only about 5 miles away.
Oh, okay.
It's a very small town, maybe 400 to 500 people.
Oh, all right.
And then going the other way, a little bit further south of me, is a little town called Anna, which is probably, we're looking at maybe 25,000 to 30,000 people.
Right. Yeah, I know just a bit then about the area because an ex of mine's mother was from Anna.
Oh, okay.
She always got down there whenever she could. She really missed. In fact, she lives around the area that you used to. She lives in Kankakee.
Oh, okay. Yes.
So.
Yes. I lived there many years myself, in between the St. Anne and the Cobden move.
Ah, okay. So that's, well, yeah, it's very different. Even though Kankakee isn't that large, with Kankakee and Bradley and Bourbonnais, it's, got a few people. And, it's larger than the area you're in. Although, like you said, 25 miles from university, Southern University. So a lot of people would potentially be able, it's just a half-hour drive then out to your place for massage or Reiki or whatever.
Correct.
So that's pretty close, actually.
Right.
And Anna with another population. So actually, some of the body workers and healers would probably really benefit from this. Now, you have already cleared enough space, there's already space cleared, because you only moved in the fall, right?
Correct, I did.
So you haven't done the whole year and a day there yet.
No.
But there is space already cleared if people were to get here. I will have a garden regardless.
Yeah,
but if I have
the garden, yeah.
Oh, yes. But if I have more people here by planting time, we could have about a 4 to 5 acre garden because there is some empty acreage without trees up closer to the road.
Right. Wow.
And that would be the long-term plan, is to do bigger farming on a much bigger scale.
Well, we can grow a lot in a small space. So you're talking 4 or 5 acres. You can supply half of Southern Illinois.
Well, and that's kind of the goal. We actually have a co-op grocery here in Carbondale, and they only like to buy local. So part of being self-sustainable would be selling our produce to that co-op grocery store to have income coming in.
Right.
And then hopefully we can recruit local restaurant owners that would want to buy fresh, organic vegetables and fruits.
Right, because so many restaurants now are really trying to do that. And,
correct.
You know, You have a perfect opportunity then to, when the community gets going, to actually do classes and things in different things, whether it's organic gardening or,
yeah,
you know, whatever, to do with your land.
Well, and also I think the house is big enough we could do classes on anything anybody wanted, you know, even a class on crystals or pagan classes, Wiccan classes. The house is unlimited for any type of thing. And then also on the gardening, years down the road, I would like to see us have an indoor growing facility so that we could produce veggies throughout the whole year.
Yes, yes. It's so, we feel so limited, and we're not nearly as limited as some places, but in the winter when you can't get fresh, like I refuse to buy tomatoes in the winter because
me too. Yeah.
Because, I mean, I don't need that cardboard. You know, the good thing was this year I had picked tomatoes at the end, a bunch of green tomatoes. And just letting them slowly ripen. I don't heat my house really, really hot. And you know what? I still have some of them. So
you are very blessed then. Because
I know.
I'm harvesting some fresh tomatoes.
Yes, in January. And I think I have enough, well, to finish out this month and probably a little bit into February.
Mm.
And so I do feel so blessed. And I'm just saying it's all because I don't have my heat turned up to 85 degrees.
Well,
I just won't buy them. And I've been at people's, you know, houses, or we've gone shopping and they want to get tomatoes. And it's like, well, get them if you want. You know,
I'm not eating those. Well, and it's starting to scare me with this GMO and the Monsanto and all the genetically modified food. I want to get away from that. Eventually, you know, have cattle so we could have our fresh beef. I don't eat pork, but if people want pork, and of course we'd have chickens for chicken and eggs.
That would be, I mean, that's a big thing that, you know, so you make sure that, yeah, people know that, because those of us who are vegan would not have an interest then.
Right.
You know, so it's important to the things that you really want. People need to know about that, you know, and your, any kind of rules or regulations? How do you feel about the alcohol and drugs and things?
Well, moderation in all things.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 16-year-old son that lives here, so I personally don't drink. I have in the past, but I don't want people stumbling around drunk or stoned. I don't. But
right.
My other thing is, I don't want to put my community at risk of getting in trouble.
Yes.
Because it comes down to, I'm the one that's going to be responsible.
Right.
And I can't monitor everyone's usage in their homes, but out in public space, it wouldn't be allowed.
Yeah. And, I mean, and it's one of those things, you know, you don't want somebody growing things and selling off your property. I had a girlfriend whose family lost their home in Chicago years ago because her brother was dealing drugs.
Correct.
And, it's, you know, we...
But I don't want anyone to think, like, my plan kind of is maybe the first four families or individuals that would commit to this, we would be the core or the founding group, we would make rules and decisions together. It's not like I'm going to be Hitler and come down with the rules.
Yeah.
There has to be a core group, and we would have to make vote on decisions and exactly how we'd want things run.
Yeah. And I think that's very good, because it's as much as you want it to be pretty freewheeling and all, you still, I mean, anything has to have rules. You have rules with the sun. You know, I mean, it's just some rules are spoken, some aren't. Something like this, they need to be written. So now you said that you wouldn't necessarily require people to be pagan to come and stay for something or passing through, but do you want your people, your individuals, and the families to be pagan who live on the property?
You know, preference, yes, but it's not necessary. As long as you're open-minded, freewheeling, I personally am not a gun person, so I don't want someone who's real gun, you know, into guns, and because actually this is a, there is no gun usage on this property at all. You can only hunt with bow and arrow.
Yeah. Yeah.
But, preferably a pagan village, but if you... artists end up here. I don't have a problem with that, as long as everyone's open-minded, and doesn't matter if some of us that are Wiccan do a ritual outside.
Right. Nobody's going to freak out. I mean, you get kind of freedom. This sounds just really...
And let me mention, too, this is would be a community where there could be children, because someone asked me about nudity.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, my child was not raised around that. So, again, in public space, things like that would be banned. But what you do in your own home is not my concern.
Yeah.
I can't police everyone's home, but.
Yeah. Well, and I think that probably, well, you know, if somebody has a house set off back here or they've got a fence or whatever goes. But if you're going to be having people coming and going to, like coming in for a Reiki session or this
chat
in the public, it's just like at festivals where they say, you know, if you're up near the entrance, put some clothes on.
Right.
Because other
right.
than that, you know, it doesn't matter. But, if you know, there's people driving by and this kind of thing, and we don't want to bring any grief on anyone. So
exactly.
Well, now, Karen, you don't have... a site or a page or a group set up yet, but you are planning on that.
I am planning on it. I think at this point I'm going to just make a page on Facebook.
Okay.
And I already have a name in mind. It would be Kathmandu.
Okay, with a K?
With a K.
Okay. All right. So Karen Laurent is her last name. Laurent.
Correct.
You can find her on Facebook. And then when she gets her page up, she will be mentioning it on her personal page also.
Correct.
So you'll
Correct.
Be able to go there. This is great, and we want to keep in touch and find out what's, you know, new in Southern Illinois now. And the place has a name, Kathmandu. Thank you, Karen, very much.
And thank you,
your dream is realized. Okay, soon.
Yes. Let's make it happen, people.
Okay. Good night.
Sorry. Yeah.
that. Next week, yes. I know. Neither.